welcome back, everybody. So we will first start with, are there any announcements? Well, I want to thank Don and Scott for facilitating the last 2 weeks. I was in Texas the first week. We ran a week-long professional development workshop on climate change for our Earth Labs project with Texas teachers. And then we went on to Mississippi and did the same thing for Mississippi teachers. And the follow-up for this is that we had teacher leaders presenting to the teacher participants, and now these teachers, a subset of them, will implement the modules with their students in the classroom, and we have a research component to the project around student learning about change over time. So that's where I was the past 2 weeks. Any other announcements?
Well, this is Kristen Poppleton. We also just completed our first summer institute of the summer. We had 40 teachers up at one of our resident nature centers that has done a real focus on energy efficiency. And so we did an energy-themed institute where they were able to really see energy efficiency work being done at kind of an industrial level, more similar to a school setting than in a home. And they did one strand of teachers actually was going through a full audit of a building and thinking about how they might be able to do something that with their students. And the other was working through our new experience energy elementary level curriculum and going through those resources. So it was fun. It was our first residential institute, so having teachers stay overnight for two nights and doing that. We had some good positive evals, and looking forward to hear how that goes this year because we're kind of considering it a pilot year of that. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Good. Other announcements? Well, I do want to let everybody know that AGU has now announced all of their sessions, and I think it was on June 17th that their website opened for submission of abstracts. So we got all nine of our sessions accepted for this at this phase, and they cover, let's see, I'm going to leave the words climate literacy off the beginning just because it will get repetitive, but they all start with the words climate literacy, and then the titles are Climate Literacy and the Next Generation Science Standards for K-12 Education, Beyond the Comfort Zone, New Approaches to Climate Change in Higher Education, Anytime, Anywhere, Climate Communication, Successful Strategies Outside the Classroom, International Climate Change Education Activities, Evidence and Best Practices from Research and Evaluation, Misconceptions and Progress in Improving Climate Literacy, Scaling Impacts of Climate Literacy Efforts Through Effective Partnerships and Networks, Beyond Climate Literacy Towards Effective Responses to Global Change, and something new for us and actually new for AGU, we have one union session. This is, I've been told, the first since they've implemented the current format for union sessions. This is the first time there's one focused on education, the role of the AGU scientific community in climate change communication and engagement. So all of the conveners should be identified, talking to each other and identifying invited speakers. Invited speakers have to be entered into the AGU system by, I think, the third week of July, and abstracts are due on August 6th, I believe. Now, parallel to that, GSA, the Geological Society of America, we have two climate literacy sessions. One's focused on formal, informal, and outreach efforts, and the other is focused on evaluation and research into climate change education. So we'll be sending out announcements of this, but we have quite a full plate at the AGU meeting, and those series of sessions will be followed by a workshop on focus on climate change that I'm hoping that all the participants across all these various sessions will participate in, and I'll send out a description of that. All that you don't need to submit an abstract or register for, you just need to come.
Tamara, this is Frank. One reminder for us to begin considering with these nine. Is it, how many got accepted for AGU? Nine?
Nine.
So we have now 11 sessions across these two meetings. How do we leverage or capture or syndicate or share this? You know, whether we have to come up with a new strategy in social media or
We did start this conversation a few weeks ago, and some of us have been away. But I am hoping to sort of get this campaign going so that, and what I'd like to do at these meetings, and I did set up a Twitter account, is to, during the meeting, to try to have some Twitter conversation around this. And we could potentially start that even a little bit earlier before the meeting. I mean, GSA is the end of October, and so we could potentially focus around that and then the AGU meeting in December. But the other part of this campaign was to get word out and to try to increase the membership. This is an ambitious goal, but we have about 410 members of the Clean Network Listserv now, is to increase that to 1,000 by the end of the year. So anyway, I don't know if we'll reach that, but that's kind of what I'm thinking. So it would be good to I need to circle back with those of you who had further conversations while I was away. I know that there was some discussion around messages and things, so we are planning to do that.
Well, there's one thing I was thinking about is there's the SlideShare application of Facebook, because, you know, every one of these sessions has a pile of PowerPoint presentations, that if there's a way to kind of, you know, build more leverage against all the work that's done to get these sessions done. How do we connect all these dots and to increase the marketing and understanding of what's being presented in these talks, whether it's video, whether it's audio, whether it's, you know, podcasts or Twitter chats and sharing of the presentations. You know, just, you know, before we get into the real busy season, which is, you know, you're in session. So I don't know.
Since we know, we will know what abstracts have been submitted by August 6th, which actually is AGU and GSA's deadlines are exactly the same day, exactly the same minute. But we could potentially have the conveners contact the people that are going to be in their sessions. And my guess is we'll be combining some of these nine sessions. At AGU. At GSA, I will probably maintain the two separate sessions. But at AGU, basically the way this happens is that they see how many abstracts you get. And if you get 20, then you're basically assured of having one oral slot and not having to combine with anybody. But if you've gotten much less than that, then they tend to combine. And what they'll let me do is to negotiate between the different conveners so that we actually combine in a logical way. That enhances it. And then at that point, once we know who's in which sessions, we can contact the conveners and see if they can send emails out to their people that are presenting, if nothing else, to the invited speakers. And we could potentially post some things on Facebook.
Right. Well, and maybe coupling growing the network is to have each of the conveners really strike out and try and get at least 20 abstracts for each of their talks. You know, but it's just a reach goal for each of us.
Right.
And then, you know, I like it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I will be sending an email out and asking everybody to share it more broadly. So in addition to the conveners, we'd like everybody on the Clean Network to disseminate to those and encourage people to submit abstracts. And I know it's hard if people have to travel, but if you do know people that are in the San Francisco area, it's much easier for them. Okay, any other announcements?
This is Mary Jo. And the NICE group is planning a meet and greet around your union session. Do you know when it will be yet?
The union session. We won't know that the way this works is that the abstracts get submitted on August 6th, and then the AGU section meeting section leads get together and they determine the program. The only thing I do know is that they will allow us to try to make sure that the union session doesn't conflict with any other of our oral sessions. It will probably be during a poster session, but the poster session is a half a day, and the oral the union session will be 2 hours. But other than that, I don't know. And I think they're saying it'll be early in the week because the education sessions, and I've given them this feedback already, because NSTA has a regional meeting at the end of the week, the climate literacy sessions will be on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and that workshop I talked about will be on Thursday. The main piece of it will be in the morning, and hopefully that'll capture everybody before whoever has to go to this NSTA regional meeting. But any more specifically, I don't know, and won't know until probably the end of August, towards the end of August.
Okay.
This is Dana Hain from UNC. I have a quick question. I presented at an oral session at GSA last year, and AGU is a new venue for me. Do the abstracts have to be about a paper that's been published?
No, they can be about brand new research.
Okay, so there doesn't have to be a corresponding paper.
No,
that goes with them.
No, I mean, it's actually intended to be cutting-edge science. They'll actually ask you how much of your paper has been presented elsewhere before.
Okay. So. Okay, that's good to know. So thank you.
A lot of times they talk about presenting a paper, but it's really just a presentation.
Yes.
Okay, that helps a lot.
So, yes, and if anybody else has down the line has questions about AGU or or which session you should submit your abstract to, you're welcome to contact the conveners directly, or I can help direct you to the conveners if that's more convenient to you. Okay, so the rest of our time is for informal discussion. We have President Obama's presentation on his climate change speech in a short while, but I also posted his plan to cut carbon pollution and his climate action plan, which, given the fact that it came out last night, I have not read yet. But I thought that if others had, or if others had comments on it, we might discuss this further.
So this is Frank. I've skimmed it carefully, and I think one thing I would like to talk about with maybe some people in the network, whoever's interested, is there's been some groups in corporate America talk about, you know, human capital development, and they focus on, you know, future workforce and specific skills and very long-term commitments to make sure that they have the workforce they need in order to do the work that they do with it, whatever their business is. And I'm wondering if there isn't a group of us who would be interested in focusing on that piece of strategic engagement, because there isn't very much related to public engagement, communication, education, anything like we do in the plan right now. So I'm wondering if there's a way to develop a complementary plan, beyond what was going to be presented today.
Because well, I would certainly be interested in being part of that conversation. It might be useful I don't know whether you want to do a parallel plan, but maybe suggest an additional section.
Well, I mean, the plan is the plan.
And
so it's not in this plan. I think unless somebody else sees something that I don't see.
Right now there's three major sections: cut carbon pollution in America, prepare the United States for the impacts of climate change, and lead international efforts to address global climate change.
Right. Right. And if you read that, the role of engagement, communication, public dialogue, what all the stuff that you read in our sessions isn't in there. So how do we skillfully move the agenda forward, build the coalition of people who want to move this forward, and pay attention to the funding, obviously. That's part of why I was going with seeing business leaders, college leadership, kind of the second nature? Yeah, second nature to do the president's climate commitment. There's got to be a way to kind of build momentum around a plan that is complementary to what the president's going to lay out.
Well, we could sort of devote a few sessions to brainstorm on this in terms of developing something that might be of the same order of magnitude and size to the rest of the... I think my computer just came alive here.
You're on the Georgetown side, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, he just started speaking.
Oh, he is speaking?
Not Obama, no. Somebody at Georgetown.
Oh, okay. Well, I just cut that off. So, okay. So there's a couple of avenues, Frank, and I think that we can. I gotta cut this off. I can get it to stop. Okay. Okay. Oh. Okay. I think I cut it off. That we can start having that conversation and develop a draft plan, and then I think the outcome, I don't know if you how fast you want to do this, but it seems to me that the information we gather at the AGU meeting across these sessions and what Mark and I were planning for the workshop was to bring all of that together, and that could potentially be an outcome, is a voice from the larger community about this, and we could potentially draft something as a straw man to have a framework to start with when we get to that meeting, but then bring everything that we've learned across these currently 9 sessions.
I definitely like the idea of coalescing, the public-private. I think, a lot of us have talked about this public-private partnership, but, we need more of the private engaged in the conversation in order for us to gain the traction that we're looking for. I mean, we have the skill sets, we have the we have the techniques, we have the research base, we have the...
Well, I was thinking, I don't think this session is focused solely on the public-private partnerships, but getting more at the paper we just submitted to JGE, the Journal of Geoscience Education, mm-hmm. around collective impact. I mean, that's what we want in terms of this. And since the paper is just submitted, I hesitate to... I will let everybody know that we put together, so you remember we did this, the survey of the Clean Network back at the end of March and the beginning of April, and the Journal of Geoscience Education had a special issue on climate change. The papers were due at the end, I think on the 15th of June. And the one that I submitted was the results of this survey, but put in the context of collective impact. How can we together in all our various activities come together around a common agenda and shared measures of moving forward. And one of the aspects of collective impact is to have continuous communication. And we are certainly doing that with the Clean Network. And so that was put into that framework. And I think that might serve as a starting point for right now. That's just an outline of what we really need to do, but to really put some flesh on how we might do that might be something worth pursuing.
I love the idea, but widening the circles into the public side, the private side. How do we engage the those who really want the long-term investments to be, done. So I completely agree with where you're going. It's just, how do we build the momentum through to December and widen the circle where it makes sense?
Frank,
go ahead.
I'm just going to suggest that maybe the best way to bring in the private sector is actually through the local and state climate action plans. You can think of this obviously as the federal plan, but I think, it's basically where is the action happening. Many of those climate action plans really do involve a lot of the private sector in those communities and states.
Yeah.
That's something that we can maybe think about, is that may be the correct place to go for. I have another suggestion, and I hate to make things bigger, but that's what I do. Anyway, one of the things of thinking about workforce development is especially workforce that would implement, and I'm just looking at again at the Obama's plan here, is protecting our economy and natural resources, which of course screens it needs workforce to do that. You can talk about promoting resilience in the health sector, but you're actually going to have people who know how to do that. So clearly there's an implied workforce development piece here. But my sense is that to talk about workforce in that area, we also then have to look at the relationship with the next generation science standards. I think that's another key piece that we can be adding in here, is that as we think about the implementation of the next generation science standards in many of the states, how does that relate to workforce development in those states? I know here in Washington State, there's a strong link in with STEM workforce development. So all of those things are related. And the nice thing, if we approach that in that way, then we bring sort of our interest in communicating around climate science, but also the educational part and our involvement in next generation science standards.
Yes, Scott, I agree. I was just part of a panel this weekend at the Museum of Science in Boston on climate change today and tomorrow. It was focused around Gary Brash's photographic exhibit. And the context, we had two other members of the panel, and one of them focused on the impacts of climate change to the Boston area in terms of rising sea level, in terms of the growing season for the fruit crops. And it was a great segue into, I talked about the next generation science standards, not so much in terms of the content, but in terms of those skills, not just the core disciplinary ideas, but the intertwining with the science and engineering practices and the cross-cutting concepts, which no matter what career the students are going to go into, they're going to need those skills, whether they become a scientist or whether they become an urban planner or whether they become they're growing fruit crops or whatever they happen to be doing. And so that, I think, is a great segue for us without having to focus on any particular content area. It's those skills that are needed by everybody.
Very good.
In order to address a problem from wherever they come, even from including the citizen making the decisions at the polls.
So, Scott, I love the idea. I would just add the 2-year degrees, the 4-year degrees, the masters, all the work that's going on that's extending from high school. That there's just a real wealth of work in the president, the American College's President Climate Commitment. Really rich work there, and that's just a whole other field that we've not really tapped into as a community. And
well,
I think that there's
that's where I think we can draw these three domains from the science standards to be used beyond the science standards. And that was the point
exactly.
I was trying to make at the museum, is that even the professionals of today need to have these skills, and so that's outside the K-12 classroom.
Yep. And some of it's technical in nature. The electricians are going to have to learn new skills in order to do the solar work and the wind work. And there's going to have to be more technical skills that comes out of community college certifications and associate's degrees, not 4-year liberal arts degrees. It's a whole range of things, but I think looking at, like Mark has talked about, the ecosystem of work that we have here, I think the more we get a richer understanding of that, the better we can make a compelling vision for that collective impact and widen the network. We have a lot of members, but we need more density of those members. Maybe look at it that way.
Yeah.
So we're coming up on 1:26 now.
I forget who said, but the White House site says now it's going to be at 1:55 p.m. So the time changed by 20 minutes.
Oh, look at that.
He heard about our call and thought that was more important.
Exactly.
the other point that I want to make, which I think is complicated, and it's, from my perspective, it stung us in the past, is that we all recognize that a lot of the efforts need to be local. But in order to have this significant collective impact, there has to be communication and leveraging across these local efforts. And that's what we're doing is the Clean Network. I think we're doing a really great job at that. But in terms of developing what we call the common agenda, I think that it's going to be a real challenge. It's not going to be an easy thing to do. But coming up with that all the stakeholders can buy into. And I agree that we need to grow the professional diversity in the network, and I can share some of these results from the survey. In fact, I'll plan to actually do a presentation on the results from the survey. But we had over 60 professional organizations are represented on the Clean Network. So I thought that was pretty impressive. But there's obviously a much higher concentration of those of us who were involved in science and science education, and that needs to expand. And I think that we need to maybe sort of through our various own networks and contacts in our local areas get more people who are not those that usually you're on but are certainly stakeholders in climate literacy and get them to become involved in our conversations. Because if we can get that broader community involved, we'll have a better chance down the line of developing a common agenda that a large spectrum of society can buy into.
You know, Tamara, I'm wondering that your point about local versus, you know, coordination across local is what's the efficiency and advantage of sharing your effort with another effort that's a, you know, city to city or region to region? Like, what's the advantage or the payback for spending time in a network? And I think that if we can articulate that, and I think there's some real examples where that's true.
We have some results. We have some people's comments from the survey, but it could be that those of us that are on the call or participate more often might articulate that better. I mean, one of the things that I tried to do through some of the various proposals, like Clean New England, was to identify materials and resources that can be shared so that everybody doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. So we have this project here at the University of Massachusetts Lowell around not only teaching the students at the college and high school level about climate change, but helping them to, within the context of the course, communicate it to others. And the toolkit for that communication piece is going to be part of two teacher professional development workshops so that other teachers will have that toolkit and help their students communicate better about climate change or other societal issues. It's actually, the toolkit itself is generic and it's content generic, but it was developed for climate change efforts. So that's an example of a kind of leveraging. So I think that we can probably come up with some examples.
But we also have people in the network like Kristen or, why am I blanking, Caroline Lewis, who does a lot of work in South Florida. Kristen, you're on the call, right?
Yep, right. I'm here.
So what I'm suggesting is that Kristen might write such a piece for us.
Exactly. Like, why is this helping you in your work in Minnesota? Mm-hmm. Being part of a network, and then what are the things that we could do to even make that more advantageous?
Right.
What are the recommendations from a more regional, state-level perspective? And, Scott, you do some of this work as well. That would really help us, maximize the value for the local. Wow.
Yeah.
That went nowhere.
I'm in my post-institute sort of stupor right now. I don't know. I consider it sort of two-way, too, because I share what I get from everyone here outwards, with the community here. Money. No one has any money. Funding to do more professional development, hire more people to do that regionally.
But I can tell you one of the things that we are able to do through the network is we reach a whole lot more people if each of you sends the email that I send or anybody sends further on. So our reach is much bigger.
Exactly.
So we need to figure out ways of demonstrating that. I will tell you that when we asked the question on the survey, how many people, you know, if people had recommended others join the Clean Network, and 72% of the members said yes, that they've recommended to others that they join the Clean Network. So, I mean, that's an avenue in which we are trying to engage on a larger scale. But, you know, I think we obviously need to do a better job at that. But, you know, then there's a funding issue and having the time to do all of that.
This is Karen. I want to go back to something that Frank said. Knowing that we have a lot of expertise in this group on getting federal grants and federal money, which, as everybody knows, is so limited and increasingly so in some venues. But Frank mentioned getting more involved with the private sector. And I don't know how many of you saw the NewsHour last night on public TV, but they reviewed a new book about the work that municipalities and municipal areas are doing and the importance of that and how it defies what's going on in Washington, because there's bipartisan collaboration and private public sector real deep work going on and engaging participants and revenue streams that otherwise wouldn't happen. And I'm wondering, as you're talking about collaborations, whether getting involved with the mayors might not be a good linkage for us, because the local action piece of what all of us are doing is really critical, and we got to find a way to network from that local action across.
And to build on that, the Climate and Urban Systems CSEP Phase 2 project is doing something really interesting of looking at how a city learns and builds resiliency and skill and deals with the opportunities related to climate change, but at a city scale and doing exactly what you just said. And that's a really interesting model. Now, it's only working in a few cities, but there is a transfer expectation. And I think that really understanding how does that work at that scale so that the funding is connected to the organizations that care about that place. So the city of Pittsburgh, who's going to fund that work in Pittsburgh and Miami and Philadelphia and so on? I think that there's, and Kristen, I imagine this is something that, you know, connects to what you're doing in Minnesota.
Right. Well, I was just going to say, you're reminding me of something that I'm not even sure how I got invited to it, but something I attended a month or so ago. It was hosted at our science museum. So I think actually it was paid for in part through Pat has a Science on a Sphere grant there. But it was bringing together all the city planners from St. Paul, from Minneapolis, but then some of the suburbs as well, and scientists. And the scientists were there to so local from the University of Minnesota, and there were some from Michigan, were there to kind of present, this is what we know right now informationally. But then the urban planners were there, the city people were there to kind of say, this is what we need from you, this is the data we need you to crunch, this is how, so we can make our decisions. It was just really fascinating. And to be there as an educator, I was there interested just to hear what they needed, but also to think about how do we show students how this sort of process works too, because this is something we're all going to be involved in. It was really fascinating. And they, you know, they were all on board, this is happening, but they were coming up with these great sort of engineering puzzles, like, you know, the water's going to get warmer, and it comes from the Mississippi River, and so they're going to have to infuse it with more cold water simply because people don't like warm water coming out of their tap, not because there's anything wrong with that. So how do we figure that out? How do we collect water? Because we're going to probably be getting enough, but it's going to be so episodic that, you know, all those different things that come through. And so at a very local scale, that's going on, you know, around the state. And those are really interesting learning opportunities, and also, you know, thinking about how that as an example. How do we share that as an example of bringing folks together?
Mm-hmm. So. Good. But there's also a piece of this, you know, in the, beyond the education piece, there's the communications and engagement and dialogue side of our work. And a lot of those stories are very poorly known by the vast majority of the citizens.
Well, and that's what you're saying, Frank. The word stories actually is really interesting because being there, we just submitted the beginning of a very long funding process through our state, a proposal that's really telling Minnesota stories, basically, which is coming off the Wisconsin Stories of Change project, and how the city planners, when these people, you know, in these city positions, when they heard me describing this project, they said, that's what we need to engage the public so they can see these stories, and then we can tell them, so this is what's happening, or this is what you say is important to you, and this is why we're then implementing this adaptation measure, or your property taxes are going up because we have to do this, you know. They actually have that story. So I thought that was really, really cool interaction that occurred.
I'd like to jump in here. I'm Jean McGregor at the Evergreen State College, and I've been a very occasional attender of these calls because I've been in a language class all year right at the call time. But I wanted to mention that a group of us here in Washington State are planning, through the project that I direct, curriculum for the bioregion, a climate solutions faculty development project. So it'll be at the undergraduate level, but it will be just around what the Minnesota person was just speaking about linking faculty members with what's happening on the ground. And we're getting it from both sides, faculty members who want to know more about what they can engage their students in, both in terms of nonprofit work going on as well as city and county action plans, of which there are a voluminous number now in Washington State. And also, we're getting approached by cities and counties saying, we want to get the word out and tell our story. So I just think this is a great opportunity. So we're just in the planning stages of the project right now.
Cool. And where are you again?
I'm based at the Evergreen State College, but Curriculum for the Bioregion is a statewide initiative that's about 8 years old. And the campuses we're thinking about are about 25 community colleges and universities, mostly in the Interstate 5 corridor from Olympia, Washington, to Bellingham. So it's the Puget Sound region.
Yeah. Mm. One project you might want to look at is the Chesapeake Project out of the University of Maryland. That's connected to their president's climate commitment. And they've been, you know, working in similar space for quite some time. And a gentleman I know there, Mark Stewart, if I'm remembering it right, is. But if you can go to the University of Maryland Sustainability website, and you can see the Chesapeake Project, and it's a cross all divisions, all educational programs, you know, but it has a strong climate change component to it. And there might be some of the work that they've been doing, which is a faculty development approach.
Yeah.
There might be some lessons learned or some recommendations that, you know, you might want to build from.
Yeah. And what is Mark's last name?
I believe it's Stewart. If you can't find it, you know, the website has everything you need.
But it's
right off the...
Yeah, we've been involved in faculty development around sustainability education now for several years, and I think we've gotten about 1,200... faculty involved at about 60 campuses. But this is sort of like a next deeper step to go to around keeping the sustainability thread strong, but build it around kind of what's going on around climate change solutions and human response and integrated planning that crosses not only energy but water issues as well.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mark Stewart is the senior project manager.
Okay, thank you.
Look at
that.
Yeah, I
just Googled sustainability in University of Maryland.
Oh, good.
And they have an office, and then they have about the office and the staff listed.
Great. Of course, the big challenge in all this is for a great big grant is to find funding. I mean, this is something we're all struggling with around where are the resources to do the scale of project that's multi-institutional, because I think it makes tons of sense to get multiple institutions involved all together in an interdisciplinary way.
And this gets back to the point I was talking about before about the public-private partnership, because somebody is going to have to fund the skill and knowledge-based development for these future employees, and whether it's government employees or private employees, somebody's going to be doing the work that we're talking about. And the sooner somebody figures out that the skills and the knowledge base and degrees that are required need to come out of the schools. But those degrees have to be, and a lot of it's already in place, but it's just not optimized because the funding is spotty. There's a larger play here than I think a lot of us have talked about in the past. And I don't know how we get there.
We've had some conversations about public-private partnerships. It is really a tough nut to crack. I mean, I think we still need to keep after it, but it's really hard to find that avenue.
Well, it's a little bit puzzling to me that Obama's agenda doesn't mention education, does it?
It does not.
No.
Well,
I'm trying to go back in my computer here to find the major NSF report that came out in about 2008 or 9 that kind of rang the bell for the importance of climate change education. And I'm just wondering where that's sort of gotten lost in the shuffle, it seems to me.
Well, I mean, I'm one of the dots that still may connect, but it's
They're
unclear.
They're playing hail to the chief.
What? Oh, yes.
They're playing hail to the chief, and the president
is. I see him. He's so. Should we sign off now and listen to his talk?
I think so. Which side are you listening to, Tamara?
What?
I'm on Georgetown.
He's there at Georgetown.
All right,
the Georgetown site. But okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
Take care, all. Bye-bye.